Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good morning and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I'm so excited to chat with today's guest. He brings a very unique and complete perspective to the conversation around junior tennis, and I know he's going to share some incredible insights with all of us today, so I'm just so happy to have him on the show. And before I bring Sammy Giamalva online with us, I want to just talk about a couple things. First off, those of you who follow along on parentingaces.com know that I am in the midst of a 21-day clean eating challenge with my husband and my daughter, and I've been posting daily updates with our menu and recipes and just kind of some insights along the way, changes that we're seeing. So I hope you're enjoying that. And if you've done a clean eating challenge or if that's your lifestyle, I sure would love to hear from you via the comments on the website. I think it would be really interesting to hear other perspectives on what we're up to right now, and we're really enjoying it. I mean, it's been a cool way to, first of all, experience a bunch of different types of workouts, because my daughter Emma and I are hitting different gyms and studios once or twice a day, trying all these different classes, so we're really kicking it out there. But we've also been eating some really unique vegetables and fruits, and so that's been kind of fun, too, to kind of test the waters and see what's out. And now that I'm living in town as opposed to the suburbs, I've got access to all these incredible markets, which is kind of fun, and Emma's great at going out and trying out new things and coming up with recipes, so we're having fun with that. All right, so before I bring Sammy on, let me just tell you a little bit about him. Sammy Giamalva, today's guest, is a former Kalamazoo champion. He is the former number two world-ranked ITF junior. He played on the ATP Tour for 10 years and was ranked in the top 25 in the world in both singles and doubles. He won two titles in singles and four doubles titles, so incredibly impressive there. He had wins over people like Pete Sampras and Mats Wilander and Jimmy Connors, so pretty cool. He went to Rice University and graduated there, and he did that after his professional career, and then worked in investment banking for a couple years before deciding to get back into the world of tennis. And he has been in the tennis world ever since. He was at Pine Forest Country Club as the director of tennis for 5 years, and in the last 15 or 16 years, I believe, bought the old Wimbledon Racquet Club in the Houston area, and he's owned and managed that for the last 16 years. He coaches a lot of juniors. He coaches a lot of college players. His own son is in college now playing tennis. So he really gives us the whole gamut of the junior tennis world, from his own personal experience to now his experience as a coach and a dad. So before I bring Sammy Giamalva on the air, I want to go to a quick commercial. But when we come back, today's guest, Sammy Giamalva, and we'll be discussing the challenges facing junior tennis.
Warning. Orthopedic surgeons are seeing an increase in overuse injuries when young athletes perform the same repetitive stressful motions over and over. Pitching, tennis, weight training, even long swimming workouts can cause overuse trauma that may require surgery. If your kids play and train hard, visit orthoinfo.org or stopsportsinjuries.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine.
Welcome back to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we have with us today Sammy Giamalda, a coach in the Houston area. And if you'd like to call in and chat with us, that number is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. Just a reminder, our show airs live for a full hour. If we go a little past that hour, which we sometimes tend to do, you can catch the end on the podcast, which will be posted this afternoon on parentingaces.com. It'll also be on the Parenting Aces YouTube channel for you to watch / listen to anytime that's convenient for you. So I hope you'll share those links with your tennis parent buddies and get the word out about Parenting Aces. We're just trying to help educate parents and make the junior tennis world a little bit easier and better for all of us involved in it. So without further ado, let me bring on today's guest, Sammy Giamalda. Sammy, are you with us?
Hi, Lisa. Yes, I am.
So your resume is quite impressive. Kalamazoo champ, number two junior in the world, all these singles and doubles titles on the pro tour. It's awesome.
Well, I've had a great time being in tennis, and from a junior to now as a coach, and it was always a family sport. My dad was a teacher, and my brother and sister played, and my son played. So I've really enjoyed being around the game and being part of it. It's been great for our life. It's been really good to our family, I'm happy to be here, too.
Yeah, well, I thank you for that. I want to just let the listeners know, we have a couple connections, though you and I have never met face-to-face. We've talked on the phone extensively. You coached one of my son's really good friends, Max Palmer. I never even told you that when we were talking, but I was the one who wrote Max's profile piece for tennis recruiting last year. So,
He's going to Bucknell. So, yeah, I know he's very excited.
Right. And Max and my son actually spent a month together. Well, I guess 3 weeks together last summer in Southern California, training and playing tournaments and doing things that I probably don't want to know about in Southern California. I think they had a really good time together, and he speaks very highly of you. And our other connection is through Coach Chuck Creasy, and Chuck had you on his show, and I listened to that interview and was just so taken by your passion and your insight that I knew you would be perfect to do the Parenting Aces show as well, because I know my audience will benefit greatly from your experience. So, again, I just want to thank you for taking time out to do this.
Oh, great. Well, I'm really excited to be here. So,
Well, let's jump right in and talk about the challenges in junior tennis. And, you know, there have been so many changes in recent years, and you're significantly younger than I am, but from the time I played juniors, the time you played juniors, to now, the world looks very different, and I'm not sure all the changes have been positive ones, and I'd love to just get your thoughts on really, for a family that's entering this junior tennis world, what's the best place to start what are some of the challenges for entering the junior competitive world, and what are some pitfalls that parents need to really be on the lookout for?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot has changed. A lot of the good things are still there, but I think and there's some new, really. I think the 10 and under tennis is such an amazing improvement with the kids, with the red ball and the orange ball and green ball and the smaller courts, and getting kids to play right away instead of having to take lessons. Those smaller courts and slower balls allow kids to play and enjoy competing and rallying versus playing on a full court with high bouncing balls. I think it's been an amazing improvement. I think the good things that were there when I was growing up, and Lisa, I don't think you're older than me. I think I'm probably older than you, but the good things of meeting really great people, being in a healthy, active lifestyle, developing really good, life lessons and virtues through competition and play are still there. And I think all of that is still there. I know with Coach, we were talking about the development. With Coach Creasy, we were talking about the development of American players, and particularly the prospect of kids finding a place to play in college. And that has changed a lot. It's changed with Title IX for guys, because a lot of the men's programs have gone by the wayside and the college scholarships have been reduced. But it's also changed with a lot of foreign players coming in to our college system. So, but for a parent entering, I would, join the USTA, get in the 10 and under tournaments. If your kids are young, get into the JTTs and the kind of community grassroots competitions, go to the play days. I mean, all these USTA vehicles, I think, are just awesome. You meet great families and great people, and I think it's a wonderful experience. And the pitfalls, I would say, is just not get too caught up into the competition. Don't take it too serious, and just keep remembering that this is play for your kids. It's where they learn lessons and they develop, and it's much more important than winning that one match. It's for them to learn the lessons that they how to deal with the different situations. That's what's really important. And I think sometimes as parents we lose that. We get so caught up into, our kids need to win this match, or they need to have these results so they have big opportunities for schools and stuff like that. And we forget about all these life lessons that they're getting, and how they're in a positive, good environment, and they're not doing, when they're in a healthy activity. I mean, there's just so much good stuff about it, about tennis. And so anyway, so that's the general overview.
It's interesting. I play on a mixed doubles team, and my team got to the playoffs. We lost in the first round, sadly, but the team that we played against on Saturday, my partner and I played against a husband and wife team, and they have a child in 10 and under tennis. And so, I never miss an opportunity to hand out my business card and promote Parenting Aces. So, I was asking these parents about their son and where he trains and, what he's doing. And the son happened to show up during the match, and at a changeover, the dad was like, "Oh, how was drills? How'd it go?" And the kid said, I hate the yellow ball. I want to go back to playing on the other balls. And the dad, you know, was like, well, you know, you're going to have to adapt. You're getting ready to turn 11. And, you know, so it kind of opened the door for me to start asking more questions, which I never, again, hesitate to do. And it turns out that this little boy trains at the same academy where my son trained here in Atlanta. And so I was very familiar with the coaches and all of that. But it was so interesting to hear this boy say how bummed he was to be aging out of, you know, the green ball, red ball, whatever, you know.
Right.
Tennis. It's the first time I've heard a kid say that. And this is not he was not a small kid. I mean, he was a tall boy and, you know, he wasn't teeny little, so I'm sure it wasn't a power thing for him. It just was interesting to hear that, and it was a new experience for me.
Lisa, that's very interesting because, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years, we've, you know, really have fought kids and parents wanting their kids to move to yellow ball. They kind of thought that move from red ball to yellow ball was like an advancement versus kind of the way that we looked at it is that, you know, the orange ball, they can get certain skill sets and it's for their, you know, level and height and, you know, physical development. And, you know, and so they look, you know, they were always rushing to get to yellow. And so, but the reality is, and we even like, I just talked to a parent last night and his daughter did not want to, she was trained on yellow ball and we pulled her back to green ball because she wasn't old enough and she really needed the development and she really fought it. And she was a great player. And I was talking to him last night and he goes, she just loves the green dot ball. She, you know, we fought her so hard and to go back. She didn't want to come to your program because y'all were making her go, but now she loves the green dot ball and, you know, and the development. And, you know, and in a couple of months, she's going to be aging into yellow ball, and I think she'll be ready for yellow ball, and I think she'll do great. But I think that time in the green dot ball is really important. It's an important time of their development, and you can develop things that we would not have been able to develop in the yellow ball. So I think it's
such as what, I mean, let's talk specifics. Cause I've always been, you know, my son missed the red, orange, green thing. You know, it all came after he was already too old. And my whole stance has always been, yeah, I think it's a great tool for teaching the game, but I think mandating the age at which a child is able to compete with a certain ball on a certain size court is wrong. It should be individualized and tailored to the child and their development, their physicality and all of that. And so it's always interesting to me to hear from someone like you who I try about why this is such a good addition to our development process here in the States.
Well, there's a lot of science behind these balls. I mean, there's science for the size of the court, that the average size of an adult versus, you know, it's this many steps to go from sideline to sideline, and it's this trajectory to the net from the serves, you know, serving, and that matches up to the average size of a 10 and under for the orange ball. And so, you know, so there's that kind of science. The big thing that the balls are slower and kids don't have the anticipation skills. They don't have the experience to anticipate, hey, this ball's going to be a deep ball, this ball's going to be wide. So they need that extra time to recognize the shots and to set up and really stroke it properly. So that's a really big consideration, and the other thing is I bet you remember watching your son play and when he was 10, and you know it was lob, 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 tomahawks, whatever, and you see the kids orange ball kids playing, and they're building points, and they're coming to net, and they're, you know, carving off volleys. It looks much more like Docevic and Federer playing versus the 10 and unders the way 10 and unders used to play. So you see that they develop these transition skills and taking balls on the rise and directing balls to the side, you know, the width of the courts. And you see the movement patterns develop. And you didn't see that in with the yellow ball with 9 and 10 year olds. It was lob. They were lob down the middle, because they were doing mm-hmm. what they had to do to survive out there. And right. So, and what we have found in Texas is that the kids that now we you know, it's you can progress through the stages by winning tournaments and by participation. And the kids that have progressed from, you know, orange to green to yellow, once they get to yellow, they progress, you know, to the top level very, very quickly because they've gotten those skill sets down. And so they jump right into a lot of kids go from green to champs to super champs. That's what it is. And Texas, it's like there's zap champs and super champs. Well, a lot of times they're in super champs within 6 months, and that used to be a, you know, year and a half process at the, you know, that would be a fast process, but now they're really progressing quickly. And so I think it's a wonderful thing for developing really good players and really good skill sets and developing the skill sets of great players. It's also an amazing place for kids to really enjoy the game before they, you know, right away, because they can rally and they can have points and the ball slows down and it's not bouncing high. And so kind of beginner intermediate kids can really have great rallies and really get the feel of tennis and what it is to rally and build points and where they couldn't before on the yellow ball. Mm-hmm. You know, even older kids that don't have the experience, we put them on the orange or the green dot. We do our adult beginners through that because it slows it down. And you know, if you keep them in yellow ball, you know, you just have to do a ton of feeding drills, and they never really ever get the rallying skills. They, you know, it just takes so long for them to get the rallying skills and the ball recognition skills and the anticipation skills and the setup skills. And but you put them on green and or orange, and they do that right, you know, they can do that right away. And then they start developing those habits, and they start to seeing the balls and recognizing the depths and understanding a little bit about the anticipation, you know, paying more attention to the cues of, you know, of watching their opponent. And so all that is so important in tennis. And
Sure. And I suspect that the success that you're seeing, you know, with the kids you coach is in great part due to your coaching experience. I mean, you are, you know, somebody who's been in the game for a long time. You are very aware of the different nuances involved in junior development and are able to communicate those to the kids that you're working with. It's like anything, you know, if you have a really good teacher, you're going to progress, and the tools mm-hmm. are sort of secondary to the skill of the teacher. And so one of my concerns with the red, orange, green is I felt like there were coaches out there using that program without really understanding why they needed to be using it and how to teach it properly. And so, you know, when I talk to somebody like you who obviously gets it, you know, of course your kids are going to thrive, and of course you're going to monitor their progress and make sure that they're not moving too quickly and all of those things.
Right. Well, I think that first the USTA put together, you know, with Higueras and McEnroe, they did a great job a few years of putting together parameters, and then Ann Pankhurst has done a great job of writing really great curriculum and identifying what are key, you know, key things that you want to develop at certain ages, both on athletic skills and on technical skills. But so that's really helped me as a coach. It's helped our pros. But I would say that the balls have made, you know, the different balls and the different court size has made me also a better coach. It's made me recognize, okay, what kind of skill sets can I get here and why are these important? And so if you follow the recommendations by the USTA, I think they really make sense, and I think they make coaches better. We train our kids 4-to-1 ratios. That makes me, I think that's made us a better, improved our coaching, because we're not just, you know, a herder of kids and trying to keep everyone behave. We can actually work. We can be proactive. We can make sure we're engaging the kids. We can, and we can work on, and the balls help us work on the skill sets that we wouldn't have been able to work on without the change of balls and court size and racket size. So sure. I think it's really helped improve the coaching. I think the coaching around the U.S. and some of the coaching training that the USTA has fostered through the regional training centers and the EDCs and things like that has improved, and that's getting passed down to the coaches that, you know, at the clubs that these coaches, you know, work at. So I think there's been a filtering down, and I think the coaching has improved quite a bit in the last 5 years through the efforts of the USTA. I think I had to give them some credit on that.
Good.
So I know it's helped me.
I'm thrilled to hear that. Yeah.
It's helped me, and it's helped, I think, all our pros have really benefit from it. So.
Well, that's good to hear. I want to ask you, as a coach, how much of what you do as a coach do you feel has been influenced by your time as a player?
I mean, definitely it's influence. I think just because you're a good player doesn't make you a good coach. I think I was a really bad coach when I first started coaching. I think what makes a great coach is that, you know, that you really care about the kids that you work with, and it's not about you, and you kind of lose yourself in them. And so I think I had that trait, so, you know, that helped me. But learning how to, you know, I've had to learn how to coach. It didn't particularly come natural, and my playing experience helped me in the sense that I could relate. It didn't really help me. As a player, I didn't break down the skill sets. I want to teach this. I just did things naturally. My dad taught me, but it wasn't like I didn't want to think too much as a player. Where as a coach, you really want to be analytical. You want to pay attention to the details, and you really want to break down the processes. And you don't want to necessarily tell the kids about all that. You just want to teach one process and put them in order of how they're going to develop. And so I would say that it's helped. It made me love the game too, I would say, and that's an important to, hopefully I portray that passion when I'm out on the court. But the coaching is, you know, there's been some amazing coaches that were not great players, and I've seen a lot of very bad coaches that were really great players. So I don't think it necessarily transfers.
So what does that mean? You were awful, and what changed? Like, what brought you to the place you're at now, which is, you know, you're very highly regarded in the industry, and, you know, parents love you, the kids love you, the other coaches respect you. What got you there as a coach?
Well, I mean, you know, I've been teaching for 25 years, but I would say that I'm, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm a great coach yet. I mean, there's coaches that are at my club that I believe that are better coaches, really. So, but it is, it's studying it. It's, reading, you know, reading the really great instructors out there. It's really paying it, really wanting to improve your kids and having that motivation so that you go at night and you're thinking about, geez, so how do I help, you know, how do I get that forehand better? How do I, you know, or what's his next step? How are we going to, you know? So I think all of that, you know, of the experience of doing it and of studying it, of working it and living it every day, I think that's what makes you better. And there's some really good resources out there now that that, you know, that coaches can you know, that coaches can really use. And so I think there's much better information than when I first started. I think.
Was there a particular coach or instructor that influenced you?
Well, I mean, I would say, you know, there's some great instructors. There's, you know, like Rick Macy. There's, I think the Higueras is phenomenal. I think Ann Pankhurst really influenced me a lot on the 10 and under and her knowledge of the development and what you can expect athletically, and, you know, and kind of understanding why they why 10 and unders have certain limitations and their thought process of, you know, a 10-year-old's not a small adult, they're a 10-year-old, you know, so the thought process are different. And, you know, so there's just Pankhurst, I would say Macy. I love reading the tennis articles. There's also, I use, you know, the guy on, gosh, I can't remember the website now, but it's a great website. This guy, you know, does a lot of research, and they have videos of all the best players, and you can. But anyway, so there's just
that one.
Yeah, that one, and then also just he's incredible, and then also
he
just
is.
the pros that I work with, I learn. So I mean, we have 10 full-time pros, and we just learn from each other. We talk about, you know, our students' games and what we would do, you know. So getting their mindset, the regional training centers, working with the best coaches and the early development camps that we've done, and conferences that we've done with USTA, and picking those guys, you know, guys' brains, and that, you know, you just, it's a constant learning process, and there's really no right answers. It's just you learn more ways, you learn the fundamentals, and then you learn ways to make sure you know you hit them and that you get them right. So
that's great. So as a dad and as a coach, there are certain challenges that those of us who aren't coaches, you must face with your own son. And one of the things that's been written about a lot recently is this whole idea of early specialization and avoiding early specialization in one sport, but rather developing the whole athlete first and the tennis player second. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that, especially as it relates to keeping kids in the game, avoiding burnout, avoiding mm-hmm. injury, you know, and keeping them enjoying the sport long term?
Well, you know, I agree that it's for the normal kid that, you know, you want to let them play a lot of different activities and sports, and that's good. That's good for development. And some kids just love tennis, though. And like I was one of those kids. I didn't, you know, and just because I was playing tennis, you know, 20 hours a week, you know, or every hour that I could, I was also doing other things. I was playing basketball at the club, and I was, you know, we're always doing other sports and other activities. So just because people would say, hey, he's specializing, I did a lot of things on a casual. I didn't have to do formal basketball or formal baseball or soccer. I did soccer on the tennis court. Sometimes we'd play soccer. So I understand where the USTA is promoting that, and I agree that it's really good to keep working those other skill sets, and they do transfer to tennis. I think more importantly, though, it's really important to keep tennis healthy in kids' lives. And most kids are not ready to specialize. They don't want to specialize that early. And even if they think they do, a lot of times when it comes down to it and you're having them do just tennis, you know, 15 hours a week, they get bored and they start going through the motions. And I think as a parent, they really need to be able to recognize when that's happening. And it's more important than, hey, oh, if they, you know, if I don't do this, you know, this drill four times a week, then my kid's going to drop in rankings and stuff. It's about kind of lighting up your kid and making them excited about what they're doing, and that's where they're going to really improve. And my son really liked the game. He's a very good tennis player, but he didn't love it the way that, you know, he didn't live and breathe it like I did. And so I kind of knew that, you know, if I tried to do more than, you know, have him do more than 6 hours a week, he got stale. He got kind of bored with it. And so I never pushed that. I let him do other activities. I let him do other things. And so, and I think tennis stayed pretty healthy for him, and he enjoyed it. And he became a pretty good tennis player. And I think he'll have good memories about his tennis. So it's just, I think it's to the individual and really knowing your kid, really knowing if they're eating, breathing, and sleeping it and dreaming it, then, you know, the balance kind of goes out the window at that point. If they're just dreaming it, then, you know, I think you just let them go with it.
It definitely answers my question. I think, you know, it can change too. And so I think as parents, you know, the challenge remains staying really aware of what's going on with your kid.
Exactly. Like as a parent, you have to know your kid better than they know themselves. And I give the example, like I always, when I was a junior, I always thought that my dad always kind of held me back. You know, he would always say, no, you're playing enough. This is enough. No, we're not going to go to those tournaments. He was always holding me back. I was always pushing for more and more. And, uh, and, we made a deal. I told him, like, if I get to top 50 in the world, then I get to turn pro if I do before I go to college. And I got to 30, and so that was our deal, and he let me turn pro. And I remember, like, the second month on the pro tour, I was like, oh, my gosh, what did I get myself into? I wasn't ready, you know. And he had protected me the whole time. He'd kind of held me back. He kind of knew my dad was a great dad. You know, he's a great dad, and he knew. And he knew me really well, and he knew, like, okay, no, this would be too many tournaments. He just kind of understood that. And I think parents really need to be in tune to their kids, because a lot of kids will think they want more, but in the reality, once they start doing more, it will be too much for them. And you'll see that going through the motions, not totally engaged, you'll see that those things happen. So even if your kids are hard workers, you know. I think it's an individual, but like we have like one junior that's actually out, I'm watching him hit right now, and he, you know, we have to make him take time off. He's, you know, he plays about 30 hours a week, and then on weekends we kind of want him to take it easy, and he's calling me, you know, or texting me two or three times to find a match for the weekend, you know, if I want more matches. And so you know, a kid like that, it's hard to hold back, and I don't think you really want to hold back. I think you got to let him go. And then there's other kids that say they want it that much, but you start seeing them go through the motions, and then you know, as a coach, we start cutting it back, you know. Okay, you know, mm-hmm. You know, take, you know, or we don't have anything this weekend or whatever, because we want to keep them fresh and, you know, and keep it healthy for them and keep them engaged and you know, really hungry to play. And I think that's where the improvement comes, is when kids are lit up and they're really engaged and they really are just want it, and that's when they really improve. It's not when they're going through the motion and, oh, okay, I got to do my 5,000 cross court forehands. I'm not saying there's none of that, where you have to, you know, you do have to do your work, but you want to be doing it engaged. You don't want to be going through the motions, because it's not going to help you.
And, sure. Let's jump to teenagers a little bit, because you and I are both at the tail end of that with our tennis players. And the challenges that these kids face once they get to high school, and they have social pressure. I know your son played high school tennis. If I'm not mistaken, won the state championship with Max last year. And
yeah, he did.
My son's team won the state championship here in Georgia. We don't have individual competition like you guys do.
Right.
We just have the team. But so, you know, that was an incredibly positive experience for my son, and I suspect for yours as well. How important is that high school tennis experience for these kids?
Well, I think there's different pathways. And I think like for my son, it was incredibly important. It was really, he won state 2 years, and one with my nephew and one with Max. So he won one with his cousin and one with Max, and, you know, he's very close to both of them. So that really was fulfilling. It meant a lot to him. And I think it was really important for Sam. It was a great experience. It was a life experience that I think he'll remember his life. It will be something that he can draw upon that he's done. So I think it's really good. I don't think it's really the pathway, and I could be wrong here, but I don't think it's high school tennis is the pathway if you really want to play pro or if you want to play for a top D1 school. I think it's, the pathway's gotten so narrow for that, that there's and it's not through like normal high school tennis or USTA Texas tennis, or so it requires a different pathway and kind of separating yourself a little bit. And
what does that look like?
Well, I'm learning that pathway. Before I always thought that, hey, if you're one in Texas or you're top 20 in the nation or whatever, you can write your ticket to any college. Well, that is not true at all. And that's
a really important message for parents to understand, right? I mean,
I think so many parents and kids, and so like we really try to get that message early when they're freshmen and sophomore, because what happens is when kids get 15 or 16 and the reality of it doesn't matter that, like, I mean, what we think that our, you know, a kid that's number one in Texas or number two in Texas, we feel like that's kind of the ultimate of success. And that they really, I mean, out of, I don't know, probably, 30,000 or 40,000 kids that play tennis their age in Texas, they're number one. You would say, man, I mean, if you're number one college recruit in Texas for football, you would write your own ticket. You being the number one or two in Texas, you might not be able to walk on to a Harvard or a Texas or A&M. You might not even make their team. So the pathway, you know, I think it's really important to get that message out to parents so they know, and the kids as well, is just as important. So they know that they have realistic expectations, so that when they are number one in Texas and they think they're going to have their scholarship to A&M, that they know that it's likely they will not have a scholarship to A&M. They need to have maybe some ATP points, or they need to be ranked, top 20 in the world ITF. Or that's the kind of, they need to be playing future pro level events, and so it's a different pathway. And I think it's a lot of the kids that and I disagree with a lot of coaches, but I think if kids knew that at 15 or 16, that they have the kids that were one and two in Texas would have the level to have, four or five or six ATP points by the time they were graduated. They just did not know the pathway. They weren't playing the right game.
That's a really important point, Sammy, because it's not that the kid who's number one in Texas isn't good enough to play for these schools. It's that they haven't played the right tournaments through their development process for the coaches to come after them. They don't have the credentials on their tournament resume or their ranking resume.
Right.
And that's a very different animal than saying that a player's not a good enough player. Right?
Well, also, that's correct. And also what happens too is that I think it's, for development, I think it's really important that the kids get outside of their comfort zone of playing just Texas tournaments. They're playing their section tournaments. They're playing the same kids and the same sites and the same, and there's a staleness factor, I believe, that is a little bit demotivating to kids. They've been playing these kids for the last 10 years. There's a level of expectations. Oh, I'm going to beat this kid. I've always beat him. I'm going to lose to this kid. I always lose. There's these expectations that kind of come in that make it harder to really make progress. And I think when you go outside and you're playing a whole group of players in a whole different environment, then kind of all bets are off. And you just play, and if your game holds up to it, then you're going to do well. And if it doesn't, then you're not going to do well. So, like, for example, I think, like, there's players in Texas that are 10 or 15 that their games would probably hold up and do really well. And maybe some of the ones or twos their games might not hold up as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, so, you know, so it's a, now some of the ones, I'm not saying the ones, in, I'm just using that as an example,
right.
You don't know which one, which games are going to hold up until they go out there. I mean, I think as coaches, we have a good feel. Like we had a kid, Josh Sheehy, and he was 2 in Texas last year, and, you know, great doubles player, a big game. And I thought, you know, golly, this kid could do really well. And he's had a great year in college this year. And, yet, the big schools really, they weren't going to give him any scholarship. And here he ended up making the finals of Kalamazoo doubles with he and his partner. They were a great doubles team. But you know, a kid like that, you know, I think if he would have been playing some futures and some stuff, I mean, I think he would have had a few points. If he would have been playing ITF, I think he would have been rated pretty high. I mean, I think he had the game to do really well. But it's a
but
different.
But that path is not
different
for everyone, right? It's not for everyone.
It's not. And it's, you know, it's a, I think as parents, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of a hard, I think with some thought, it's not such a hard pathway. Like, you know, to go play 4 tournaments in Florida with a team of 3 or 4 players, then it's more affordable. It's more, you know, so I think that with some thought, kids that, you know, when they get 15, 16, if they start playing those tournaments and getting exposed to that level, and I think it would be more motivating, and they would really get engaged and lit up, then they're going to, you know, I think, you know, by the time they're 17, they're going to be competitive in those, and then they're going to be starting to win points. And I just think it's, you have a different player by the time you're 18. From that pathway. So,
and there are a lot more of those futures opportunities coming in the U.S. I mean, there has been a conscientious effort to bring more of those entry-level professional events back to our local clubs and facilities.
Not nearly enough. We're way behind.
Right.
Europe, besides Russia, is like, you know, the same size as the U.S. And they have, besides Russia, they have about 10 times the number of futures than the U.S. does. And and they have about probably, they have 10 times the number of players in the top 100 than the U.S. does. Now, this used to be different when we were growing up, when most of the tournaments were in the States. So, and it also affects our kids' ability to play college tennis, to play for the schools they want, because, you know, the European kids are having a lot of opportunity to play the futures and a lot of the ITF events. Texas, we have 2 ITF events, and I think we have 3 futures. That's Texas is a, Turkey has 50, you know, so it just doesn't, you know, Spain and Italy have over 30. So,
right.
you know, it doesn't, we need a lot more of those. I think that should be a real focus of if U.S. wants to get, the U.S. players, more U.S. players, you know, more development and to high level players. So,
absolutely. No, I agree with you, but my point was that I think people are starting to understand that maybe people that are, you know, in positions to bring these events back, and
right.
I mean, you're starting to see, you know, there were several more this year than there were the year before, and we still have a long way to go, of course, but I think the more we talk about this, the better.
I don't think it's grasped by the coaches. And, you know, you talk to most coaches and they say, well, you know, the American kids are just not good enough. Well,
right.
You know, they don't understand the cause and the effect, and that, you know, we need those to, that's part of getting the American kids, the exposure is part of getting the American kids good enough. And, I talk to so many coaches, and I like, we need to bring them in. Well, if we bring them in, then it's just it's going to be we're bringing them for the foreign players because Americans are going to lose, you know, first round in qualifying. And no, you know, the first one they might, but in the second one they're going to start winning rounds, and you know, and then they're going to start winning points. And they, you know, I think just a lot of coaches don't see that, and. And I don't think the USTA completely sees that and the importance of it. You have to feel it, touch it. You know, I started realizing that I could be a player when I, you know, because I was, we had a lot of guys in the top 100 that were in Houston, and I would practice with them, and all of a sudden, like, you know, I would take a set off them, or I'd beat them, or whatever, and then I'd realize, hey, maybe I could play pro. I mean, I always wanted to play pro, but I didn't really, it didn't dawn on me that I could actually play pro until I started beating those guys. And then that's what made me start believing in myself. And our kids aren't getting that. And so they're training hard and they're working hard. But that's not going to get them to, the exposure is the only thing that's going to get them to that higher level.
Yeah, absolutely. And the same thing is true, you know, for kids that aspire to play college tennis and having the opportunities to hit with college players. And, you know, I know my son went through that. You know, all of a sudden he's competitive, and then all of a sudden he's beating some of these kids. And it's like, well, yeah, maybe I am on the right track. So it's not necessarily only with professional tennis. It's also the case with the college game and, you know,
absolutely.
Coaches, you know, I love hearing coaches that facilitate this kind of match play for the kids. I think it's just enormously valuable.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, like, you know, and I think the other side too is that kids that are number one or two in Texas and they're just playing the major zones, well, there's a complacency also that hits them, you know, like, hey, I'm good enough. I'm, you know, why do I need to improve my second serve? I'm still winning the tournaments. You know what, you know, I don't need to do that. But when they go out there and they're placing stiffer competition, then it's like, okay, hey, I got killed on my second serve last tournament. I need to go out there and improve that. And it's not that much to improve it when they're open to improving it and they're committed to it, then they can get it done. But if there's not that motivation and that complacency takes over, then there's no incentive to push themselves past that. So I think
it's a
twofold.
Challenge to keep the kids motivated. I mean, when they are playing tournament after tournament after tournament, it's very difficult to keep them motivated. And, you know, there's one school of thought that motivation has to come from inside. There's another school of thought that, you know what, the coaches need to do their part to keep these kids hungry and fired up. And I think the truth lies somewhere in between, but, you know,
I
certainly
do too,
talking
and I think,
about it.
I think I do too. I also think, like, you know, there has to be a vision of how you get to where you want to go. And so, like, if you're just playing your Texas tournaments and you want to play for A&M and you know that just by being number one in Texas, you're just spinning around. You know, you're just on one of those wheels that just, you know, you're running, like, you know, so you're not going anywhere. So there has to be a vision and a pathway. If there's no pathway for these kids and they're, you know, and they don't know of the pathway, then how can someone be motivated if there's no pathway to get to where they're going? And I think that's what I think that we need to help create better pathways to our kids if we want to develop, Division One players, top Division One school players, and if we want to develop pro players. So that they're very kind of hidden, narrow pathways now. That very few families and very few kids can afford to spend money going to all the ITFs internationally and trying to chase your international junior ranking. And very few families know about just playing futures and trying to get in and going that pathway. Those aren't known. They're not really, I don't think parents have confidence in them. So it's. I think those are the things that we can do. Maybe USTA can really facilitate a lot better than it's doing now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a great place to end. Sammy, thank you so much for being with us today. And you've given us a lot of things to think about. And parents who are listening, take what he says to heart. He knows whereof he speaks. He has lived this life a long time and has experienced it from all the angles and, you know, has seen the game change and has studied it enough to understand what it takes to get to the various levels. And so, Sammy, again, I just appreciate so much your time and your expertise here.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I enjoyed the hour, and I love our sport. I think tennis is such a great sport for families. It's a great family game. It's a great game for your kids to get physical and healthy and learn great life lessons. And I love being around. I love hearing tennis balls, and I love the environment.
Well, your passion comes through loud and clear, so thank you. Thanks for being with us. And to my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in this week. I hope you enjoy the show and that you'll join us again next week on Parenting Aces.
Thank you, Lisa.